evening, everybody. This is Lil Cavalier, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here it is. Second week of February, and the snow is actually melting. We got above freezing temperatures today. We haven't had a good temperature in the 40s for quite some time. So some of that ice, in fact, a lot of the ice, if the sun hits it, is melting completely now. That's good news. And much of the snow as well. Well, the Super Bowl. I bet a lot of you saw it. I didn't. Not that I have anything against the Super Bowl, but as you might have heard me say once or twice before, it was getting so expensive to keep the DirecTV, the satellite TV, that Elizabeth and I, before her death, several months before she died, decided to give it up. It was costing us well over $1,000 a year, and we figured that money could go to better places. And besides, we were hardly ever watching it. Elizabeth liked to watch figure skating, but that's only a very short time out of the year. You know, maybe a grand total of, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours. And aside from that, I would sometimes put the weather on in the morning for 5 minutes. But we were great readers, and we just never watched much TV. So we thought, well, gosh, this is not cost-effective. I do have an antenna. I have yet to connect it. Just get some of the local stations from nearby Salisbury, Maryland. I might even be able to pick up Baltimore. I'm not quite sure. So that shows you how little I watch TV, because I haven't even bothered in quite a number of months to hook up the antenna. But one of these days I'll get to that. And I bring that up because it seems like much of the coverage of the Super Bowl was not of the sport, but of the halftime show. You had people that loved it, and you had people that hated it. So I'll bring you just a couple of samples. The first one is from Fox News. This was published February 8th. If I'm not mistaken, that was Sunday. And that means that they put it out soon after the halftime show had happened. In fact, yes, it says February 8th, 9:11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is on Fox News by Jackson Thompson, sports writer. And the title says, Bad Bunny's Super Bowl Halftime Show Ignites Trump's Fury and Divides Viewers. And the subheadline says, Many viewers were frustrated that almost none of the show was in English. So here's the discussion. Super Bowl 60 halftime show featuring Latin trap artist Bad Bunny was the subject of immense criticism from Americans on Sunday night. President Trump called it, and this is in quotes, one of the worst ever. He went on to say, The Super Bowl halftime show is absolutely terrible, one of the worst ever. It makes no sense, is an affront to the greatness of America, and doesn't represent our standards of success, creativity, or excellence. Nobody understands a word this guy is saying. And the dancing is disgusting, especially for young children who are watching from throughout the USA and all over the world. Unquote. And Trump wrote that on social media. And he went on to say, this show, and here's the word show in quotes, is just a slap in the face to our country, which is setting new standards and records every single day, including the best stock market and 401ks in history. There is nothing inspirational about this mess of a halftime show. And watch, it will get great reviews from the fake news media because they haven't got a clue of what is really going on in the real world. And by the way, the NFL should immediately replace this ridiculous new kickoff rule. Make America great again. Well, I have to admit, not having watched much football since I don't have the TV this year, I'm not sure what the new kickoff rule is exactly. And I meant to look that up, but I just didn't get around to it. If you're football fans, you know what it is. If you're not football fans, you don't care what it is. And going on with this article, prominent conservative influencers were among the show's harshest critics. And even Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights at the U.S. Department of Justice, Hamie Dillon, chimed in. One of the biggest criticisms of the show was that it was almost entirely in Spanish. And let's see now. Other users even tied the show to the nation's ongoing debate about illegal immigration and deportations at the hands of the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, that is, ICE agents. However, some fans of sports stars praised the show, including former NFL star J.J. Watt and New York Knicks point guard Jalen Brunson. The show concluded with a message on the Levi Stadium video board that read, "The only thing more powerful than hate is love." The show is expected to be the first Super Bowl halftime show to be sung entirely in Spanish. However, pop artist Lady Gaga showed up to sing the Bruno Mars song, "Die with a Smile." And Bad Bunny wore a mock football jersey that read Ocasio 64, Ocasio being his last name. Some suggested the number referred to the death toll from Hurricane Maria that the Puerto Rican government first claimed. The number was later revised to nearly 3,000. Many fans opted to skip this year's Super Bowl halftime show to watch Turning Point USA's All-American halftime show, headlined by Kid Rock, including Pro Football Hall of Famers Eric Dickerson and Brett Favre, and former ESPN host Sage Steele. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt said the president would be watching the All-American halftime show. And let's see, Ms. Leavitt told reporters at Thursday's White House press briefing, quote, "I think the president would much prefer a Kid Rock performance over Bad Bunny. I must say that." However, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell defended having Bad Bunny as the performer earlier this week. He said, "Listen, Bad Bunny is, and I think that was demonstrated last night, one of the great artists in the world, and that's one of the reasons we chose him," Goodell said. "But the other reason is he understood the platform he was on, and this platform is used to unite people and to be able to bring people together with their creativity, with their talents, and to be able to use this moment to do that, and I think artists in the past have done that." And he went on to say, this is, again, Roger Goodell, "I think Bad Bunny understands that. I think he'll have a great performance," unquote. That's a little bit confusing. At one point, it seems like he's looking back on it. At another point, he's saying, as if he's talking about the future, he'll have a great performance. Well, I'm not sure. So, Bad Bunny. I've never seen Bad Bunny. I don't think I've ever heard the name. I guess I'm just out of it. I don't think I've heard the name until they were talking about him being on the halftime show. But I guess I go back to Fleetwood Mac and some of the great performers of the 70s. And we mustn't leave out Elvis and the Beatles. All right. Next, we have an article from WorldNet Daily. The previous one, by the way, was from Fox News on January, make that February 8th. This one's from WorldNet Daily on February 9th by Joe Kovacs. The headline reads, "They are freaking out. NFL and advertisers panicking over staggering size of Turning Point USA's Super Bowl halftime show." Had a very nice picture of the late Charlie Kirk and Erica Kirk at the beginning of this article, if you were to turn to it. But reading the article, the National Football League, as well as the entertainment industry and advertisers, are said to be panicking over the staggering size of the All-American Super Bowl halftime show produced by Turning Point USA, which was an alternative to the Spanish-language Bad Bunny show broadcast by the NFL. Best-selling author Jack Posobiec, who welcomed viewers to the patriotic alternative and dedicated it to slain civil rights leader Charlie Kirk, revealed on the Benny Show Monday that the preliminary estimates of 25 million views on the TPUSA show headlined by Kid Rock are likely to go much higher. And these are the words of Jack Posobiec. "The 25 million number that has come out already, that's just in the main YouTube and Rumble streams. So that's just crunching the numbers there," Posobiec explained. we've already got. Just YouTube alone. Turning Point's mainstream, 6.17 million. And the 1.7 is significant because the previous number two YouTube live stream of all time was 6.15 million. He went on, it boggles the mind to even think about those kinds of numbers. We might see 40 million. We might see 50 million. The sky is really the limit because we have so many partners, and then we haven't even gotten to X, and so many people are restreaming it and putting it out there. So we are going to see a staggering number of views on this. And for Sobiech noted, the entertainment industry and advertisers are very, very worried about this. Citizens Alliance CEO Cliff Maloney had a source inside NFL Network who said they are freaking out over the size of this audience, unquote. I'm going to skip down a little bit. It says, host Benny Johnson responded to Sobiech saying, it ultimately shows that you've lost the culture war, but the NFL has decided to sabotage and betray their own fans to do a program that is not in English. It has third world aesthetics. That's open borders messaging, LGBT messaging, woke propaganda. I think the greatest sin of them all, you can't even listen to it. It's like mumble rap, but Spanish, and songs that nobody knows. All the videos coming out from the stands, Jack, showed people standing like statues. Nobody was into it. Nobody likes this. I don't stop there because the rest is pretty much repetitive. That was from, once again, WorldNet Daily, February 9th. All right. A long time ago, well, maybe not that long, when Elizabeth was with me before her death, we did a program where someone had sent us some information about the bad side of eating pork. Well, this kind of ties in with that in a different way. This is from the LifeSite News, Monday, February 9th, 2026, and it says, Canada approves genetically modified pork for human consumption. This is by Anthony Murdoch. And the subheadline says, genetically altered pork may not be welcome, according to a survey that found 74% of Canadians believe cloned meat and genetic editing practices have no place in farm and food systems. Canadians may soon be unaware that they are eating genetically modified pork products after Health Canada approved human consumption of the modified pigs. Like last month, officials from Health Canada and the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, CFIA for short, said it is quote-unquote safe for Canadians to eat pork that has been genetically modified so that they do not contract porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome viruses, which is PRRSV for short. The modification to the pig's genes includes a small part of the gene associated with PRRSV removed. Health Canada said that foods made from, quote, these pigs are safe and nutritious for people to eat as pork currently available in Canada, unquote. The genetically modified pigs come from UK-based Genus PLC, that must be the company name, and Winnipeg-based PIC Canada Limited. Both companies requested that Health Canada allow their gene-edited pigs to be used as food. As it stands, PRRSV-resistant pigs are allowed for consumption in the United States, Brazil, and Colombia. Well, that's something to think about here. It's not clear when and if meat from the pigs will reach Canadian shelves. However, the products would not need special labeling because Health Canada said the pork does not pose a, quote, greater risk to human health than pigs currently available on the Canadian market, unquote. One Canadian advocacy group blasted the news that genetically modified pork was to be allowed to be sold in Canada. Canadian Biotechnology Action Network, CBAN for short, is against the approval of gene-edited pork. Here we have a quote from Lucy Sharrett, S-H-A-R-R-A-T-T, who serves as a coordinator for CBAN. And again, that's the Canadian Biotechnology Action Network. She says, quote, if gene-edited pigs actually get produced and sold, Canadians won't know if their meat in the grocery cart is from these genetically engineered animals. Again, it's by Lucy Sharrett. The approval of the gene-edited pork comes only a few weeks after Health Canada shelved plans to move forward to allow cloned cattle and swine in the marketplace after backlash from the public and activist groups. According to a survey conducted by Du Breton, and that's spelled D-U, capital B-R-E-T-O-N, according to that survey, 74% of Canadians believe that, quote, cloned meat and genetic editing practices have no place in farm and food systems, unquote. The growth of synthetic meats, gene-altered meats, excuse me. Let me start that one again. The growth of synthetic meats, gene-altered meats, and plant-based products has caused many health experts and citizens worldwide to express concern about the future of food. The Great Reset of Klaus Schwab and his World Economic Forum, or WEF, has as part of its agenda the promotion of quote-unquote alternative proteins, such as insects, to replace or minimize the consumption of beef, pork, and other meats that they say have high carbon footprints. Spokespersons for the World Economic Forum's Great Reset have long touted them as advantageous to mankind. But others believe it is just another way for global elites to seize control of the food chain and poison human beings. Indeed, multiple media outlets have reported that WEF-linked Bill Gates is among the investors in companies selling synthetic eggs to retail stores in 2019. Gates has backed an array of other companies pushing genetically modified food as well, including Beyond Meat and Impossible Foods. And again, that was from LifeSite News, Monday, February 9th, 2026. And if you heard us in the last year or two, you would have heard Elizabeth and I talking about some of these plant-based meats and some of the ingredients that can be very detrimental that are in those, including things like pea protein. Some of the ingredients were tough on the liver. Others, I don't remember the details. I'll have to see if I can locate that article again and just read the cautions sometime. And all this genetically modified stuff, what's it going to be for our children and grandchildren? Elizabeth and I never had any children, so that's not a concern in our family. But certainly we have nieces, we have nephews, great nieces, great nephews. What's it going to be like for them in the world to come if these things are just allowed? There's enough bad stuff in the food we eat every day. I'm guilty of it, like many a person. I admit I will sneak a few potato chips. I know they're filled with fats, probably, and eat too much sugar. I'm guilty, like the next person. But I'm hoping this spring to improve things. Ever since Elizabeth's death, and by the way, that will be 1 year this coming Monday, the 16th, that she died. Ever since her death, I think I put on a little weight, like many a single man. I don't pay as much attention as I should to my diet, but I'm going to try and get out and walk more with the coming of good weather. And today's a hint of that. It's really nice out today compared to what we have had. Well, now, many of you may remember something called Pizzagate a few years back. Now, at the time, I was working full-time, had a long commute, so I didn't get to hear Alex Jones when he was talking about this and some of the other alternative radio broadcasters. So I had only a hazy idea. So I looked it up on the internet, and this ties in, as you'll see, if you're not familiar with it already, with a conspiracy theory several years back, actually in 2016. So why are we talking about it today? Well, I'll tell you in just a minute. First, let me just say, if you would like to write to us, you can write to me, Luke Caverly. You spell that, L-O-U-C-A-V, is in Victor, E-R-L-Y. You can write to me at Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, and the zip code is 21609. So that's Luke Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And if you can make a little contribution to keep this show in the air, it would be great. If you can't, I'd still like to get your letters. Tell me what you like about the show, what you don't like. If there's a particular thing you want to comment on, by all means, feel free to do so. And our website, now it's my website, sadly, that we don't have Elizabeth with us anymore. Our website is DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. You can listen to the archives. You can see I'm going to update with our web mistress, Angel. I've been very... very late at sending her things about the topics in the program. And I mean, remedy that in the next few days. I've been getting out my old notes and going through them and sorting everything out. So hopefully all that will be up to date in the website, DividedKingdomRadio.com, within a few days. So now, what's this got to do with Pizzagate? Well, it seems that there's a connection to Jeffrey Epstein, at least an indirect connection. Here's something from the Western Journal that appeared on February 9th, 2026, by Brian Chai, C-H-A-I, and the title reads, "Hundreds of Bizarre References to Pizza and New Epstein Documents Raise Eyebrows." Outside of perhaps Watergate, no Gate scandal has quite captured national attention, quite like Pizzagate. Pizzagate was a conspiracy theory that exploded online during the 2016 U.S. presidential election, alleging that a child sex trafficking ring involving prominent Democratic officials was being run out of a Washington, D.C. pizzeria called Comet Ping Pong. The theory grew out of hacked and leaked emails from John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman, which conspiracy-minded users on forums and social media interpreted as containing coded references to abuse. Despite repeated denials, the story spread rapidly across platforms like Reddit, Twitter, and YouTube. The consequences turned from online rumor to real-world danger in December 2016 when a man armed with a rifle went to the restaurant to, quote-unquote, investigate the claims and fired shots inside. Thankfully, no one was injured. Authorities declared there was no truth to the allegations and said the pizzeria had no connection to any trafficking operation. Pizzagate has since become a textbook example of how conspiracy theories can take on a life of their own via social media and political polarization. All these years later, the story still hasn't completely died off due to critics who mock its existence and true believers who still feel that something sinister is afoot. And the Jeffrey Epstein files appear poised to rip open the sealed pizza box anew. As the Department of Justice has unsealed troves of documents related to convicted sex offender, that occurs with Epstein, it has given countless intrepid minds the chance to dig into the files themselves. And for the more conspiratorial minded, a simple keyword search for pizza, and the search bar yielded plenty of food for thought. There are 849 results within the Epstein files when you search specifically for the word pizza, and even more details when you dig in deeper. Reporter Tom Elliott is one such investigative mind. He uncovered an odd fascination for discussing pizza among Epstein and, quote, his friends, unquote. And Elliott said in one of the posts on the multi-post thread, quote, as always, I am not making any claims, just reporting what I find as I dig through these files, unquote. Even the staunchest deniers of Pizzagate would feel compelled to admit that Epstein and his associates sure do have a weird thing for pizza. Vanity Fair similarly reported on this unusual love of pizza and dug up some interesting quotes. One 2018 correspondence to Epstein read, quote, what time do you want to get pizza and grape soda tomorrow? Unquote. There was a 2015 email with the subject line, your pizza is yummy, yummy. This is better than a Chinese cookie. Let's go for pizza and grape soda again. No one else can understand, unquote. That was a different 2018 correspondence. And they have in parentheses in this article, of note, grape is a euphemism for rape, often used by online content creators who want to avoid getting dinged on social media. Vanity Fair reported that Pizzagate searches spiked over the weekend following these documents' release, proving that interest in the conspiracy theory remains high all these years later. Well, I admit I did a search of Pizzagate online today because I had forgotten it, exactly what it talked about, if I ever knew. As I say, that was a time when I was very busy and I left most of the research to Elizabeth. Well, interesting. How many did they say there were? 849 results. That does seem kind of high, doesn't it? Well, maybe time will tell. That again came from the Western Journal. The date was February 9th, just a few days back, 2026. And while we're on the subject of Jeffrey Epstein, we've got something here. I'll read the title first, then talk a little bit about the background. Epstein files reveal prosecutor's announcement of his suicide one day before his official death. Now, that brought to mind some other instances. One in particular comes to my mind. If you've done any research at all or read much about the World Trade Center disaster in 2001, you'll remember that the BBC said that Building 7, that was the building that was not part of the initial collapse, but it was not far away from the two World Trade Center towers in New York City. It collapsed for no obvious reason around 5 o'clock at night. And, of course, the Twin Towers collapsed independently sometime in the late morning. I couldn't tell you the exact time. The interesting thing was that the BBC announced the collapse about 20 minutes before it happened. Now, I was reading some of the comments by those who defend the official version of what happened on September 11, 2001. They tended to say, well, it was just somebody got, anticipated that it was about to collapse. They were having all kinds of stories that it was getting weakened, fires throughout. But to this day, a lot of people have very, very serious doubts that that's the truth. But that's a strange thing. How did they broadcast 20 minutes before that that building was going to collapse? And you see, they didn't say it was going to collapse. They said it had collapsed, past tense. Well, that's a mystery. And here's a mystery. Again, let me read the title. This is from LifeSite News on February 9th. Epstein files reveal prosecutor's announcement of his suicide one day before official death. This is by Andreas, I hope I'm pronouncing it right, Waelzer, W-A-I-L-Z-E-R. The recently released Epstein files contain a draft statement by a federal prosecutor announcing Jeffrey Epstein's suicide one day before his official death. According to a report of the Daily Beast, the draft appears among at least 23 documents. And this is a quote. Among at least 23 documents in the disclosure labeled as statements from the Southern District of New York's U.S. Attorney General Office. Unquote. The files contain multiple versions of similar statements with varying degrees of redactions. That is, things being crossed up. Some leaving nearly all identifying information blacked out, and some leaving names and phone numbers unredacted. The draft is dated Friday, August 9th, 2019. However, Epstein was officially found dead in his cell after 6:30 a.m. on August 10th. The statement by then-Manhattan U.S. Attorney Jeffrey S. Berman said, quote, earlier this morning, the Manhattan Correctional Center confirmed that Jeffrey Epstein, who faced charges brought by this office of engaging in the sex trafficking of minors, had been found unresponsive in his cell and pronounced dead shortly thereafter. And it continues, today's events are disturbing, and we are deeply aware of their potential to present yet another hurdle to giving Epstein's many victims their day in court. To those brave young women who have already come forward, and to the many others who have yet to do so, let me reiterate that we remain committed to standing for you in our investigation of the conduct charged in the indictment, which includes a conspiracy count, remains ongoing. Unquote. Again, that was a quote from the U.S. attorney. The version of the statement originally published in 2019 was dated August 10th, aligning with the official narrative of Epstein's death. So let me just interject there that it seems that they realized this was a can of worms, and they better correct it. But now the original version has come out. So reading on, the infamous convicted sex offender was awaiting trial on charges of sex trafficking minors and conspiracy at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Manhattan when he was found dead on the morning of August 10th, 2019. While his death was officially ruled a suicide by hanging by the New York City medical examiner, his passing came amid an improbable cascade of alleged security failures. The dubious circumstances of his death, combined with the fact that Epstein could potentially have revealed damning information on many rich and powerful elites in his circles, causes many to doubt the official narrative. Nicholas Tartaglione, Epstein's former cellmate, has claimed Epstein was purposefully left unprotected while in federal custody. According to prison records, guards assigned to monitor the jailed millionaire socialite did not conduct the scheduled inmate counts at 3 a.m. and 5 a.m., nor did they conduct the mandatory 30-minute checks in Epstein. Moreover, two of the security cameras positioned directly in front of Epstein's cell malfunctioned the night he died. Additionally, forensic experts have said that the cell where Epstein died was left in disarray and was never properly inspected. Furthermore, newly released records that were reviewed by CBS News show discrepancies in the different reports of what happened during the night before Epstein was found dead. A functioning surveillance camera showed a small part of the staircase leading to the tier where Epstein's cell was located, where an orange flash, that's in quotes, orange flash can be seen at about 10:39 p.m. on August 9th. An observation blog by the FBI describes the figure as, quote, possibly an inmate, unquote, while a separate review by the Justice Department Office of Inspector General said it was a corrections officer, possibly Tover Noel, carrying orange-colored bedding or linen. However, Noel told investigators, I never gave out Leonard, ever, because that's done in the shift prior, she added. Independent video analysis, make that analyst, cited by CBS said that the movement captured on the camera was more consistent with that of an inmate or someone wearing an orange uniform. Prison employees said that escorting an inmate at that hour after prisoners had been locked down for the night would have been highly unusual. This discrepancy challenges the official assertions that no one entered Epstein's tier that night, fueling speculation about what exactly occurred on August 9th and 10th, 2019, inside the Manhattan prison. And, of course, was it what they said it was? Did he hang himself? But if so, how did they know the night before? Or was that the wrong date? But why did he get the wrong date on all the official papers that have now come out? Rather mysterious. Brings to mind the convenient deaths of certain people in the past, like Lee Harvey Oswald. The official thing says that Jack Ruby just happened to arrive at the perfect time, just by sheer coincidence, that Ruby had been wiring some money to one of his employees just minutes before. And so he, just by sheer chance, walked into the basement of the Dallas City Jail and shot Oswald dead with one bullet. But when you examine that more closely, you see that Ruby could have easily known the timing. In fact, they delayed bringing Oswald down for an hour. Why was that? Who can say? But it's not the kind of clear-cut case they would like you to believe in the official documents. All right, now, let's do something entirely different. Let's go to school. Or in this case, and let me just say, by the way, that was LifeSite News when I just read about Epstein's date of death. LifeSite News, February 9th. This next one is WorldNet Daily, February 8th, by Jaron Krausen. I guess you pronounce it Jaron, or J-A-R-Y-N, Krausen, of the Daily Caller News Foundation. It's been reprinted with permission on the WorldNet Daily website. And the title, "We're Very Forceful Because They Won't Listen." That's a quote. And the comment says, infamous school board trains staff to fight terrorist parents. Loudoun, and by the way, Loudoun County is kind of an unusual spelling. I don't know the source. Maybe it's named for someone, probably. But it's spelled L-O-U-D-O-U-N. But having lived for many years in Greater Washington, heard the traffic reports, I know it's pronounced the Loudoun County School Board. In January, hosted a training to teach staff and board members how to fight off terrorist parents, according to eyewitnesses. The closed-door meeting was meant to respond to, quote, terrorist activity, unquote, at school board meetings, and included dozens of hired actors playing the role of Loudoun County parents, according to Channel 7 News. Sources who were present at the meeting told the outlet, that would be Channel 7 News, the actors simulated parents bringing guns into the meeting, and staff were instructed on the same measures students are taught to use in the event of an active shooter situation. Run, hide, and fight. Board Chair April Chandler referred to the actors as disruptors and agitators and mentioned past meetings where parents voiced concerns over some of the district's actions. Loudoun County became infamous in 2021 after being exposed for allegedly attempting to cover up a sexual assault in a school bathroom perpetrated by a male student who claimed a transgender identity. The victim's father was later arrested. Notice it's the victim's father, not the perpetrator, but the victim's father was later arrested at a board meeting after he demanded that the board admit they covered up his daughter's attack. And the father, Scott Smith, told 7 News, quote, "We're not violent parents. We're loud. We're very loud. And we're very forceful. Because they," that is the school board, "won't listen. I know nobody that has wished any violence upon the school board. Not me. Once." This reads a little strangely here. I think maybe it's supposed to be, "No one ever has thought about doing anything violent against the school board. We want to be heard and we want to be respected. And we want our children protected," unquote. Loudoun, along with 4 other Northern Virginia districts, has promised not to comply with the Trump administration's orders to keep boys out of girls' bathrooms, locker rooms, and sports. The district recently suspended 2 boys for questioning why a female student was recording them in the boys' locker room. A federal judge has since blocked the punishment. And as I'm just interjecting here, I believe that that case is still before the courts. It does seem rather strange for a female student to be recording the boys. And what was she doing in the boys' locker room? Well, today, it seems anything goes. Remember that old song? Anything goes. That was WorldNet Daily, February the 8th, 2026. All right. Once again, if you'd like to write to me, write to Lou Caverly, C-A-V-E-R-L-Y, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I have just a few, it might be as few as 3 books left. COVID and Coming Chaos, excuse me. COVID and Coming Chaos, the book that Elizabeth and I co-wrote about 4 years ago, but it's still very relevant, I believe. And it's free. That's the nice part. I'll be glad to send it out to you. If you could put in a couple of bucks, maybe $5 to cover the postage, it would be greatly appreciated. And as I said last week, there's a gentleman, I think, from Colorado, and there were 2 addresses, and I appear to have sent it to the wrong one. I probably should have sent it to the other one. If you'll write to me, I will see to it that those books go out to you. I've been keeping those aside just for you. So it's the person who requested 2 books, and I'll be glad to get those up to you, but I need to know the correct address. And as I say, the books are limited. There might be as many as 3 left, possibly 1 or 2 more. And when they're gone, they're gone. And I don't believe I'm going to have the money to have another printing done. Will I write another book in the future? Gosh, I don't know. That would be a challenge, now that I don't have Elizabeth, because she did the biggest part of the writing. But it's something to think about. Maybe that's something I will tackle in the future, because there are a lot of new controversial subjects that would make an interesting book, as we all know, in the last 4 or 5 years. Well, now, let's move on to Zero Hedge, their website. Democrats flip-flop on ICE agents and body cameras. This is by Tyler Durden, February 9th. Last week, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries sent a letter to Republican leadership calling for sweeping reforms of the Department of Homeland Security before funding expires on February 13th. The letter outlined 10 guardrails, that's in quotes, guardrails for DHS, including the demand that ICE agents wear body cameras when interacting with the public. While most of the demands on Schumer's and Jeffries' list were never going to be agreed to, the use of body cameras by ICE agents has bipartisan support. Even President Donald Trump has voiced support for body cameras, pointing out that they, quote, generally tend to be good for law enforcement because people can't lie about what's happening, unquote. Days later, Democrats reversed course after left-wing privacy advocates raised quote-unquote concerns about body cameras becoming a mass surveillance tool. Democrats now fear the technology could feed video of protesters into facial recognition systems, allowing ICE to identify and track demonstrators. And Senator Ed Markey, who I believe is quite left of center politically, Democrat of Massachusetts, said, obviously, we want them to be wearing body cameras, but we would want restrictions placed on what that information could be used for. We want to make sure that we have the accountability for how these officers conducted themselves on the streets of our country. But we don't want it, in turn, to be used as a way of coming back and suppressing free speech, unquote. Well, if you ask me, this is loose speaking now. Seems like anything Trump wants, agrees to, or approves of, they're going to fight. They'll find an excuse to fight it. Although it may well be that they're more extreme left-wingers of the party, forcing them to reverse their stand. And just reading a bit more of this article from Zero Hedge, lawmakers and activists have accused ICE of using various cameras to surveil protesters by running images through license plate readers and facial recognition systems. And Democrats are now claiming they believe body cameras could serve the same purpose. DHS said its body cameras are not equipped with facial recognition. But Democrats fear the images could be downloaded and later run through facial recognition. Republicans had already agreed to provide more funding for ICE body cameras before Democrats began pushing for limits on how the images are used. The Homeland Security bill that passed the House last week included $20 million for equipping immigration enforcement personnel with body cameras. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem announced on February 3rd that all federal agents deployed to Minneapolis would immediately be equipped with body cameras. She said the program would expand nationwide as funding becomes available. The reversal, that is by the Democrats, raises questions about whether Democrats are genuinely concerned about protester privacy or worried that body camera footage will protect ICE agents from false accusations. And again, this is Lou speaking. That was my thought. The Democrats don't want the ICE agents to be able to prove that they were innocent. They would like to dismantle ICE because they love illegal immigration. Well, that's my editorial comment. Let's see now. Laurie Rees, back to the article. Laurie Rees, R-I-E-S, director of the Border Security and Immigration Center at the Heritage Foundation, explained that wearing body cameras could shield agents from misconduct claims. She said, quote, defund ICE is the same movement and has the same funders and organizers as the defund the police movement, she told the Daily Signal. And she went on, just as body cams have helped police defend against false claims meant by rent-a-rioters, that's a neat phrase, again I'm interrupting, rent-a-rioters. In other words, a lot of these protesters are going from place to place and being paid to protest. No doubt about it. So let me begin that sentence again. Just as body cams have helped police defend against false claims made by rent-a-rioters, so too will body cams help ICE defend against false claims made to obstruct ICE and prevent deportations to protect the less political power. Video recorded by an ICE agent on his phone when he fatally shot Renee Nicole Good in Minneapolis not only showed Good striking the agent with her car before she was shot, but also gave critical context of the events before the shooting that debunked several left-wing narratives about what happened. Democrats claimed that Good was just a scared mom who accidentally ended up in the middle of an ICE operation and was merely trying to leave the scene. The footage proved she was there to obstruct the operation. The agent's phone footage also showed Good's wife yelling at her to drive her car before striking the agent. All right, that's a good place to stop for that article. but it's a good one. And you can find it again on ZeroHedge.com. The date, February 9th, 2026. Did I say 2025 on some of these? They're all 2026. They're all very current. All right. We've got one or two more, as time permits, having to do with ice. This one is by Christina. Christina Laila, L-A-I-L-A, the Gateway Pundit, February 9th. Just in, Clinton judge blocks California's law that banned masks for ICE agents. And a little subheadline, a federal judge on Monday afternoon blocked the state of California from unmasking federal agents. Last month, California banned federal law enforcement officers from covering their faces with masks. The Trump administration filed a lawsuit against California and argued the state's new law violated the Constitution's Supremacy Clause. On Monday, U.S. District Judge Christina Snyder, a Clinton appointee, agreed with the Trump administration's assertion that California's law violated the Supremacy Clause. Politico reported as follows. A judge on Monday blocked California from enforcing a new law sharply limiting when federal agents can wear masks while engaged in deportation operations. U.S. District Judge Christina Snyder rejected the Trump administration's claim that ICE agents need to wear masks to prevent doxing. However, in a 30-page decision, the judge said California's No Secret Police Act, that's the name of the act, No Secret Police Act, appears to violate the Constitution's Supremacy Clause by discriminating against the federal government because the law's provisions do not apply to state or local law enforcement officers. Judge Snyder concluded, the act treats federal law enforcement officers differently than similar situations of state law enforcement officers, unquote. But the judge also turned down the federal government's request to block another California law aimed at abuses in immigration enforcement, the No Vigilantes Act. It requires most local, state, and federal law enforcement personnel to display their name or badge number while on duty. First Assistant U.S. Attorney Bill Esaly, and his name is spelled E-S-S-A-Y-L-I, celebrated the win and blasted California Democrat politicians. U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi also celebrated the win. And she said, that is Attorney General Pam Bondi, quote, these federal agents are harassed, doxxed, obstructed, and attacked on a regular basis just for doing their jobs. We have no tolerance for it. And she went on, we will continue fighting and winning in court for President Trump's law and order agenda. And we will always have the backs of our great federal law enforcement officers, unquote. That was from the Gateway Pundit by Christina Laila, February 9th, 2026. Looks like we got just enough time for one more, or a part of one more. This one was also from Zero Hedge. The title says, AOC announces training to teach agitators how to block ICE agents and dox feds. This is by Tyler Durden. Monday, February 9th. Now, although it appears under Tyler Durden's byline, it was actually authored, it says, by Steve Watson via Modernity News. Democrat Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is openly pushing training sessions to arm agitators with tactics to obstruct ICE operations and dox agents, escalating the left's war on border security. The brazen move spotlights the growing network of Democrat-led sabotage against federal immigration enforcement as Trump's America First policies aim to deport criminal illegals and restore order. Ocasio-Cortez made the announcement during a town hall in Queens, New York, positioning it as, quote, legal, unquote, observation, while tying it to recent fatal confrontations involving ICE protesters. She told attendees she voted against the $1.2 trillion government funding bill that includes DHS allocations. "I did not vote for this. I voted no," Ocasio-Cortez said. She encouraged monitoring ICE in neighborhoods and revealed plans for teach-ins, and that's in quotes, teach-ins, with the group Hands Off NYC. Ocasio-Cortez said, quote, "knowing things you can do legally to observe, to film, to take notes without being deemed as impeding law enforcement," unquote. She said, we have upcoming teach-ins with Hands Off NYC, she added. "So we will be doing that jointly in our community." This is a good article, but I have time only to read a very small part of it. DHS stated, quote, "our law enforcement officers are now facing an 8,000% increase in death threats against them and a more than 1,300% increase in assaults against them, while they put their lives on the line to remove murderers, pedophiles, rapists, gang members, and terrorists from American neighborhoods," unquote. That's a quote from DHS. And it says, "the push from AOC aligns with a broader Democrat pattern of inciting resistance to ICE, as exposed in recent scandals." Well, our music is coming on. I want to thank you for listening. Tune in next week, and if you want to write to me, write to Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. Well, spring is in the air. You have a good week ahead, and tune in again next week. Good night.